Is there a hidden connection between 2012, the Book of Revelation? Up next, Whitley Strieber with his latest work, The Omega Point, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Noted author Whitley Strieber, also the host of the paranormal and science-themed internet podcast Dreamland. You can hear it off of his website, Unknown Country. Whitley's current novel, The Omega Point, is a novel based on a hidden connection between 2012 and the Book of Revelation. This is Whitley's second novel dealing with the subject of 2012. The first was 2012, The War for Souls. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Whitley, how are you?
Well, George, it's great to be on Coast tonight. That's delightful to be talking to you instead of listening to you for once in a while.
Well, by the way, I wanted to thank you for giving me such a great ride on your program, Dreamland, when a few months ago we did a role reversal and you interviewed me.
Well, and then not only that, we got one of the best listenerships we've ever had. You're a popular guy, so that was great.
I had fun. But talking about popular, you have come up with something that is going to be released, I believe, what, tomorrow, isn't
tomorrow,
it?
Tomorrow, yeah.
The Omega Point.
Yeah, well, I was, you know, the 2012, my first novel about this subject, is it's a thriller, but it's also basically got a lot of humor in it, because at the time I wrote it, I was not thinking in terms of an ancient Mayan prophecy having any real significance. Let me put it that way. And I was thinking to myself, all this brouhaha that's going on, it's going to be a repeat of Y2K, only worse, because absolutely nothing is going to happen. Not even any streetlights are going to go out. But over the couple of years since then, it's obvious, first of all, as we'll talk about later, that our world is changing. But I happen to be looking in Revelation for a quote for something I was doing, and I went down across this particular phrase, and I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the Book of Life. The dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books. And I just happened to notice that is Revelation chapter 20, verse 12.
Oh, no.
I thought Revelation 20, 12 is the last judgment. How can that be? Now, the thing that makes it even stranger is the books of the Bible were not put into chapter and verse when they were written. They weren't really put into these chapters and verses until the 15th century by an Italian monk. So what is going on here? And you have to think to yourself, maybe it's a coincidence of some kind, some bizarre coincidence.
Well, then, as you know, I don't believe in coincidences.
Well, I'm having trouble with this one, I have to tell you, because there's just too much going on. In terms of social change and earth changes, and now this dreadful thing happening in the Gulf, it just seems like every year that passes, it's more intense than it was the year before. I look back in 2005, 2006, it was not like this. Then we had, of course, the great earthquake and tsunami, and I'm being told that the explanation for all of the relatively high intensity earthquakes that are still taking place on the planet is that these are basically aftershocks of that enormous event. Even now, but we have more 5 and 6 earthquakes now than we have in a very, very long time, and even though the absolute numbers of earthquakes has remained the same, the numbers of stronger quakes has been rising steadily for the past few years.
The intensity, the intensity is there.
Right.
And in some areas, Woodley, we are having swarms that just keep coming one after another. And I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, I'm sitting on one of those areas right now.
Yeah.
Trying to.
You are.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, we just had one the other night, in fact.
Yeah, And then we had like six or seven right after that.
That's right.
This oil spill in relation to things is also uncanny, isn't it?
Well, it's absolutely terrifying. And what's so frightening about it is that the oil is coming up through a pipe system that was made by the same people who made the components that failed.
That's right.
And it is exerting an enormous amount of pressure on that system of pipes. And if they should fail, then it could become essentially an oil volcano, completely uncontrolled. And George, if that happens, I don't know what we got left to do but pray.
Yeah, and hope that that reserve or that field is not as big as everybody thinks it is, but I think it's huge.
Well, it certainly has got the volume and that would indicate that it's large. But there's one good thing. It's also got a lot of gas content, which, having grown up as an oil man's son, I know means that there might be not as much oil there as it looks like. So, but a lot of, because the gas obviously takes up some of that space. But it's still probably the most dangerous single thing that mankind has ever done. And in terms of what could happen,
I think so too,
if it gets worse.
The Omega Point is a novel, but you base a lot of your work on fact.
Well, yeah, I got to the point when some years ago I was really at a crossroads. I had stopped writing hard fact books because I couldn't get enough out of it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there's a lot of things that I think are true that if I said them as fact, they would be without support. Like in 2012 in the Grace, there's just laundry lists of things that are like that.
Right.
And
right.
Of course, critical mass is a bit of a departure for me because it's a fact. It is clearly a fact-based thriller.
Right.
This book is like those books in that there's a lot of alchemy in it. There's a lot of material about the transmutation of elements and gold that we'll get into during the course of our time together that I think probably have a factual basis and based on my own experience, but that I can't prove and that I'm not going to really the energy of this stuff. I can get that energy out through fiction much better than I can through just simply sitting down and writing a book of fact.
And you could explain it better.
Much better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When I go around the country with Lee and, you know, I give a speech here and there, somebody always in the audience will ask me a question about 2012. And they'll say, so what do you think is going to happen? And my answer now is pretty well tied into the sun. I because of the fact that we're, you know, going into a solar maximum pretty soon, I think something's going to happen to the sun. And the Omega Point basically highlights something that goes wrong with the sun, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm looking right now as we speak at the June 9th, 12th through 18th, 2010, New Scientist. I am looking at the cover. On the cover is an enormous image of the sun, and in the middle of that image, a huge headline, What's Wrong with the Sun?
Oh, my.
And the sun is not functioning the way we thought it would. What we thought a few years ago was that we would be already well into the largest solar max ever recorded. This was what was expected. Instead, we've gone through a long period of quiet sun, much quieter than had been expected. It's not the quietest period we know. The Maunder Minimum and the Little Ice Age were both quieter than this, but it is unexpected in the extreme after the last solar max, which was very intense, and what we understood going on inside the sun indicated that the exact opposite of what is happening would be happening. And what's disturbing about that is that it means we don't know, we don't have a really clear track on what's happening to our essential star right now anymore. We don't know.
That's scary.
And, well, just on Father's Day, there were a series of phenomenal eruptions on the sun. The solar max is really starting, and it is, whether it will be a huge solar max or other things will happen, I don't know, but it's fairly clear at this point that what is going to be happening to the sun is different from what we had thought would be the case now.
And do you know if anything goes awry with an X flare pointed right at our planet, we're cooked in terms of electronics in our way of life? The grid goes.
Yeah, potentially. It's the double whammy that you have to worry about, where one comes up, and this nearly happened, actually, and it might have been August of 1972, where there was a pulsed, two big flares pulsed, one right after the other. One of them stripped away the magnetic field, and the other one came in just afterwards, but it came in just a couple of days too late to have reached the surface when the planet was virtually naked of its magnetic field. But the thing that's disturbing about this is both the sun's magnetic field and the Earth's magnetic field right now are weakening, and we don't know why. We assume that's probably true all over the solar system. But for example, in the past few years, we've seen a lot of energy obviously being absorbed in the outer planets like Mars and Jupiter, where they're clearly being heated in by means that we don't fully understand. And yet the solar minimum that has just passed has thrown all the global warming models into disarray.
Oh, completely.
Completely, because, you know, what is probably, and I'm not a weather forecaster, but my best guess for this summer in the Northern Hemisphere is that you're going to have a short but very sharply hot summer, where once the planet gets turned far enough towards the sun, it's the solstice today, the summer solstice, and it will go farther toward the sun over the next couple of months. You're going to see a very, very hot period in the center of the continent. We'll see it in the center probably of the European continent, too, in late July or in August.
You know, with everything that's been going on with the spill, the economy, we could ill afford to have anything happen with the sun creating havoc on this planet at this point.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's another thing that's happening, which I'm happy to announce is, there's evidence that we're getting into another 40-year cycle of increased volcanic activity, too. So we're just, you know, what else could happen? It reminds me of the movie Trains, Planes, and Automobiles, where they have so many disasters. John Candy and the two of them have so many disasters. When a car catches on fire, they don't even care anymore. They just sort of take it for granted.
They just throw their arms up in the air.
Right.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, you know the old saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Maybe that's what's happening to us right now.
Well, let's hope it doesn't kill us.
No.
You know, because the thing is, you can get a cascade of rapid change on this planet. That's one of the things that happens here, where you have periodically, you'll have these sudden cascades of rapid change, and everything, the whole planet just overturns itself. You know, there's a very fascinating book published quite a few years ago, I think back in the 70s, called Hamlet's Mill, which is one of the first sort of revisionist early history books. And what they were seeing was fascinating, that two authors were saying that the early, all of the early stonework and so many of the statue, so much of the statue and so many of the messages that have been left behind from early, very early history indicate that they were trying to communicate something about sudden great catastrophes, and that what they were trying to communicate was essentially their knowledge that Earth goes through long periods of stable climate and stable, unchanging morphology, geology, and so forth. And then it suddenly, like Hamlet, it kind of goes crazy for a while.
Bang.
Bang, exactly. It was a brilliant book and probably really seminal in the sense that so many people have followed that. Another brilliant book is Barbara Hand Clow's Catastrophobia,
yes,
which takes the idea that we're literally in amnesia about our own past because of a great catastrophe that we experienced.
One of the authors for Hamlet's Mill was, because I remember his first name, it's Giorgio. De Santillana, I think is
that's right, and Hildegard von Detchen, I think
that was his partner.
Yeah.
Okay. How did they have the vision to write what they did?
Congratulations on remembering that really difficult name.
Well,
by
it's
the way.
Giorgio.
Well, yeah, well, it's true, and you're George, so it's not so hard. Well, how did they? I mean, they really had incredible insight. They did because they were it was seminal. They were starting. It's like Rand Flameth, and of course he used the work of Charles Hapgood, but he extrapolated incredibly brilliant things from it. They were later picked up by Graham Hancock in Fingerprints of the Gods.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely. But the beginners of these things, neither of them are, I believe, around anymore. But the people who start these things are brilliant, incredibly brilliant people.
Couple minutes before the break here, Whitley, and tell me about Omega Point in terms of it's going to be available tomorrow. Is it out at the bookstores or just Amazon right now?
It should be out in the bookstores as of tomorrow, and you should be able to get it at Barnes & Noble, Borders, your local independent bookstore, Walmart, Target. It'll be they're pretty good, my Petor Forge, at getting the book out, so yeah. It'll be out there.
Do I see a movie coming here?
I don't know. It's never something I think about, because I think it ruins your book if you think about it in terms of making a movie of it.
Well, that's true. That's true. But you've got the reputation now, so, you know.
There'll probably be people in Hollywood reading it, I guess.
They will be knocking at your door, no doubt.
I hope so.
How's Ann doing these days?
Fabulously.
Super. And the website, Unknown Country, still
doing well? Well, Unknown Country is just about to roll out a whole new version of itself in the next week or so. They're just finishing a few changes, and it's going to be quite a marvelous thing. I think it's going to be beautiful.
And a good evolution for it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Whitley, you stay with us. Whitley's website, though, is unknownacountry.com. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He has written just a number of best sellers. The Coming Global Superstorm that he wrote with Art, and then Communion, of course, which was the mother of all mothers for the book. Critical Mass that we had him on not too long ago. And this latest one now, The Omega Point, which is the secondary book to 2012, The War of Souls. The Omega Point picks up after 2012, The War for Souls, and it's tied into the Book of Revelation. More to come with Whitley Strieber on Coast to Coast AM. Yes, and we have Whitley Strieber tonight on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about his latest work, The Omega Point. Last hour of the show with Whitley, we'll take your phone calls, but we've got much more to talk about when we come right back. Whitley, you talk about in your work, The Omega Point, on the human race going toward a journey to the underworld. What do you mean by that?
Well, first, The Omega Point, it's not a sequel at all to 2012. It's totally different characters and a different story. I may have misspoke myself earlier. It happens, actually, takes place in 2015, and nothing from the previous novel, A War for Souls, is continued in it. So
I'll stand
whatever
up.
Happened to him in the War for Souls is still going to stay there. Regarding this journey, this underworld journey that I think of us as taking, the occult matters. We always sort of think to ourselves in our very secular world, oh well, you know, that stuff with people conjuring dark forces and Satanist stuff is all silly, a bunch of nonsense. But I think that evil is there. It's very smart and it's real sticky. It sticks to you if you start to fool with it. It's like a tar baby.
Yes. Absolutely.
And you definitely don't want to play around with it, because you're going to get that oil on your slicker and you're not going to be able to get it off again. And sooner or later, the harder you try to clean it off, the dirtier you're going to get. And during the late 19th century, people began to play with the occult. There was a wave of interest all over the Western world in seances. And sometimes, you know, if you do that, you play with that sort of thing, you have good results if you play with the Ouija board. But other times, what wants to come in is what is still interested in this place. And perhaps that's not ever, almost never, what we would want to be with. Because the exaltation of heaven isn't really about earth. However, the disappointments of the fallen are very much about earth, and they're very much about dragging us down with them. That's why you have to be very careful with this whole occult enterprise, and people were not careful with it.
No, they dabbled, and strange things happened.
And a truly terrible man came out of it called Aleister Crowley. And Aleister Crowley in the early 20th century was known as the most evil man in the world. This was actually not wrong. And I will tell you why it wasn't wrong. Madame Blavatsky, mm-hmm. who created Theosophy, created a really a remarkable body of work. Aleister Crowley took parts of it and twisted it in such a way that it attracted the interest in Germany of anti-Semites, and ended up in this twisted form being used by secret groups like the Thule Society that had a Karl Haushofer that had an enormous impact on Adolf Hitler and on his thinking, and justified the idea of the Aryan as a sort of supernatural being and as the Jew as unworthy of life. This is where it went, down and down, and we went with Crowley down into the darkness. The next thing that happened after Aleister Crowley joined the Order of the Golden Dawn in 1910 and began to become a factor in the thinking of these edge people and these peripheral but dangerous people in the world, came the assassination of Franz Ferdinand in Austria, the Archduke of the Austro-Hungarian Empire in Serbia.
It set up World War I, didn't it?
Right. Now, it had, the two things weren't seemingly connected. Princip, the assassin, was interested in, he was a nationalist in his own country. Crowley probably never even heard of him. But this assassination set off a series of events that they're still affecting our history. It was like a house of cards fell down. First, World War I started. Then, toward the end of the war, the Germans unleashed Lenin on Russia by sending him to the Finland station in a sealed train. And he entered Russia, fomented the Bolshevik Revolution. The German Empire collapsed. the Russian Empire collapsed.
Everything went fast, didn't it?
Everything went one thing after another. In 1919, the Deutsche Arbeiterpartei was founded in a truly desperate Germany that felt that it had had its victory stolen from it. It was not true, but they had genuinely lost. But then another critical event that helped to form the modern world. You see how all these things, one is kind of falling after another, was the last reparations meeting in Weimar, when it was decided by the Allies, in one of the most foolish decisions in all history, to strip Germany of its gold and to take the gold. And it was taken by the French and the British.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, the Americans protested against this.
Stolen, basically.
Right? It was stolen, yeah. And the result was Germany was destroyed. If you can imagine a dollar suddenly becoming more worthless than worthless.
And they didn't have fiat currency then.
No, they did not. And so people who were living on you ended up with a situation where your pension, which you had been living on, was worth less than a penny. It was so worthless, it was almost uncountably worthless. A member of my family, I'm a Texas German, went to Germany in not my father's family, but another mm-hmm. line of my family, went to Germany during that period and took $1,500 worth of gold. Gold was still legal currency in the United States.
Right, right.
And he always said he could have bought an entire block of Berlin for that money. But he gave it to relatives who were starving. That was why he went there. And you had a whole country starving. And because of this incredibly evil, foolish, and stupid decision. And from there, the curse of Nazism began, and you see where Crowley and his ideas then come back in. But this little man living in a Das Haus in Vienna is exposed to these ideas that justify his dream that he was somehow part of a master race, and that the Jews who had been his friends when he was a beggar, who had helped him with his paintings.
He turned on them, didn't he?
He turned on them. Exactly. And this would never have happened if the Allies hadn't stolen Germany's money, hadn't ruined their currency. And then another thing happened that would set the stage for the future. A man called Leo Szilard, walking down a street in London one day, a nuclear physicist, suddenly stood stock still. And he realized, he suddenly had understood how the nuclear chain reaction worked. He had come across the most dangerous secret in nature, in a world that was heading like a breakaway, runaway train toward war.
And was never ready for it.
Was never ready for it. And so the next phase in our journey through the underground began long before the atomic bomb went off. And then there was something extraordinary that happened. And I want to go back now that I purposely passed over this. The Fatima event, the Dance of the Sun, Fatima in October of 1917, excuse me.
In Portugal.
In Portugal. I happened to meet an elderly priest back in the early 70s who had actually been there, who had witnessed this event. And what was happening in Fatima was these children were reporting seeing a lady who, if you listen to how he described this lady, she was looked like a gray dressed up in some kind of very strange, colorful costume made of light.
That's, I've never heard this before.
Both of these priests I met described. Let me tell you what they said. There were two of them, but one of them did most of the talking. They saw saw this disc in the sky. There were thousands of people there who all saw it, and he said it was absolutely was not the sun. He said it was something else, and it was moving back and forth in front of the sun. And not only that, he said, I could see some figures moving on it.
Oh, my gosh.
And in other words, it was a UFO event, a spectacular UFO event.
I always thought that.
These children came away with, and I think it's the reason that Lucia sequestered herself in a convent, because what she remembered seeing and what the Jesuits made it into were two entirely different things.
Good point.
And the other children all died almost immediately after it happened.
Yeah, they died at a young age. But what about the three secrets, apparently?
Well, the first thing that she predicted was that there would be a sign in the sky that would portend the coming of the next war. And on 25 January 1938, what remains one of the strangest and most mysterious auroral events ever recorded took place over Europe, where auroral activity occurred almost all the way down to the ground in all the way into southern Europe. It was an absolutely extraordinary auroral event. Literally, within a few months, Hitler marched into the Sudetenland, which was the beginning of World War II. Now, that is absolutely recorded. The Dance of the Sun, the prediction, and then the beginning of the war, all meaning, in my opinion, that what happened at Fatima was a great and important event.
And we know, Whitley, we know the sun did not come down.
Of course it wasn't the sun.
Yeah.
It was something else.
Yes,
it was just like those priests were telling
They
you.
Saw something, but it wasn't the sun coming down.
Well, I talked to them before I was in any way aware. I mean, I had been very conscious of UFOs when I was a little boy, but by the time I was in my 30s and early 40s, or I guess I was in 30s then, I hadn't thought about that in years. The subject never came up. We never even discussed it in those terms. But what they were describing was a disc, and as I recall, one of them said there seemed to be a ladder on it, and you could see figures moving on this ladder. And they were all cloaked in light. It was all very bright.
And this figure that the three saw, the one that the church said was the Blessed Virgin Mary, what do you think? It was this alien gray?
Well, I don't know. A tall woman with a very thin face wearing a cloak of many multicolored shimmering cloak that shimmered as if it was made of light. That was what they said the children were saying, and the crowd was going through the crowd at the time. But that's what the children were seeing.
That is a story.
Yeah.
You know, on December 21st, 2012, it's going to be a Friday night, and we're going to have one of our coast-to-coast extravaganzas. You've already been invited. And, you know, we're going to have a handful of people here, Whitley, just to see what will happen on that day. And you know what? It could be like Y2K. The clock strikes midnight and nothing happens.
Well, I think that's exactly what it will be. Because that's not what this is about. The chapter and verse is not the chapter of December the 21st, 2012. It's the chapter 2012. I think that this year is in some way and known in some level of consciousness to be an indicator year during which a fundamental change of some sort doesn't take place at that second. But in the future, when we look back on that year, we will say, yes, that is the year it all changed.
I think you're right.
I think that's what it's really about.
And maybe even a little before.
Well, I think we're into it now. I think that the accelerant part of the change will take place in that year, and then afterwards it'll probably begin to subside in some respects, and in other respects it'll probably intensify. I can't predict the future. I'm no prophet.
When you picked up at 2015, how did you pick that date?
Well, Now, this is the part of the story that I hope is fiction, but I keep worrying about that with my books because too many of them seem to
happen. Yeah, you're more of a psychic these days.
I don't know. The first one that sort of seemed to happen was a book I wrote quite a while ago called Nature's End.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the it had all these fires that took place in California, and the whole place caught on fire.
And look what happened out here.
Yeah. Well, it happened back in those days. It happens a lot out here.
But absolutely.
There was a huge fire in Oakland that was just very like the fire that I had in my fictional community of Beverly Heights. And another bizarre thing about the book was there was a car that was set in the future, and there was a car in the book called the Hunyadi, which was a Korean-made car that everyone was driving. And then a few years later, here comes the Hyundai in Korea, and I thought, how creepy.
That is.
And
that is strange.
So I always kind of worry, you know. When 2012 was published, the month before it was published, there was that 2012, for those of you who don't know, it's a book about parallel universes being physically real,
mm-hmm.
and moving between these universes. And lo and behold, a big major paper was published by an Oxford mathematician indicating that parallel universes probably are physically real, and that we're sort of cascading through all of these universes at the same time without realizing it. It was an incredible paper. And then, you know, the next month the book came out, and then in December of that year, if you go to my website, and I think if you look at 2008, December the 15th, in Whitley's Journal, you'll find a description of a really remarkable experience that seemed to be an experience of living my life in a group of parallel universes all at the same time.
What did you mean by the Omega Point in the title of the book?
Well, that's a really interesting question. There was a doctor, or rather actually a priest called Fayard du Chardin, who probably articulated this idea the best. He thought of it as being a moment of transcendence when we go beyond the limits of space and time. It's what unfolds not during time, but after time. And he believed that the whole universe was heading there. And I think he was right and wrong, because I think he was right in the sense that that's where we're going. But I think he was wrong in the sense that the whole universe would arrive there at the same time. I think each intelligent species arrives there, each planet arrives there in its own time. I think the reason that we have so much trouble understanding and communicating with our visitors is they're already there.
Absolutely.
And the gulf between us is that we're still living in time, and they are not living in time, but we are about to leave time. That's what this journey into the underworld is all about.
Stay with us, Whitley. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.